Oftentimes, there will be some dynamic tension between our habitual consciousness and where our consciousness wants to go. Just that awareness is like a game changer in the way that we can decode our dreams.
The dream world and the wisdom within dreams, the ancient technology of dreaming and wild dreaming, and how we can merge our dreaming and our visions with our life to create sacred art, to create more intention in our life and what we're co-creating with these higher realms. And so thank you for being here. Welcome.
Yeah, it's an absolute honor.
Wild dreaming. I love this phrase. It just something about it really popped out at me. And I think it's because when we think of wild, I think so much of earth-based things. I think of nature. I think of the wind. I think of the cycles and the seasons and like this very material part of the wildness of humanity and of earth and of all of this. But how are dreams also wild?
Yeah, it's a beautiful question. So anyone who has paid attention to our dreams can attune to the fact that they are very much like the elements and like nature. There's a part of them that is like undomesticated. They are not something to be tamed. They are an intelligence in and of themselves that is beyond us, but also of us. And so there's a way that we can turn to them with a reverence to their wild nature and bow to it, you know, and bow to it and say, please come and teach me. And there's a really beautiful dream guide, Tokopa Turner, who talks about courting our dreams. So rather than turning to our dreams and being like, give me this, or to in some way, you know, control them, there's this romance, this way of like bringing our hearts to it, to the dream world. And I call the intelligence from those realms the dream weaver, and to romance, to turn our attention in a way that is not extractive, but rather coming from this devotional place and this respectful place. And then the wild nature of our dreams begins to speak to us. And the beauty of that is that it can take us beyond our wildest dreams, you know? And there's something so incredible about the humility, right, that happens when we do that, and how what we think we want and what we think we need, we acknowledge our limited capacity in seeing the deeper possibilities available for us. And that's the beauty of also acknowledging the greater intelligences of life. And this is one of the ways to turn there.
I love that idea. I've never heard that before, of courting the dream. So we're coming into relationship with the dream. We're not just going to bed. We are going into another relationship, which is always communicating with us and through us. When it comes to seeing our dreams as like the beloved or the other, which is infusing love into us, how do we start to treat our dreams with that reverence? If maybe we were just, you know, having those throwaway dreams, mental processing, whatever, how do we bring it into the sacred?
Yeah. So the first thing is about intention. So as I'm sure many people listening know, intention runs everything. So changing the energetics of how we turn to the dream world begins there. If there's an intention to remember our dreams, then already dream recall like exponentially grows just with that held awareness. And it's even more palpable and amplified if we hold it in the liminal state between when we like rest our head and we're waking, and then we cross the bridge over to the dream realm or the sleep. And that intentionality, especially in the liminal state of speaking from a reverent place, dream weaver, or you can call it higher self or higher intelligence. I am listening. What can I learn? Or you can also ask for something particular about our lives or of a direction. And this is actually a practice that's called dream incubation. And there has been a lot of cultural examples of this over ancient history. One of the cultures is Egypt and North Africa. My family's from East Africa, and there's a parallel between them. But in Kemet, in ancient Egypt, there is these spaces and temples where people would go to dream in very sacred environments, specifically tailored towards dream incubation, which is planting this question or this seed for direction or for some form of wisdom that we are just saying, Dreamweaver, will you help me, you know, reveal or resolve in this direction, in this place of my life? And then inevitably, and I can say this from evidence personally as well as with the people who I've worked with, there's an answer that comes, but the answer does not come in a straightforward way. And so oftentimes this is like textbook. It always happens, especially in the beginning of our journey of turning our attention and courting the dream world. People are like, I don't really think my dream was significant, but like this and this happened, da da da. And then when we go through dream decoding and looking into the symbolism, because the language of dreams is also so beautiful and so powerful, and it's not speaking in our conscious mind's way of being, it's speaking through poetry. And so that element of it makes it very confusing for people and easy to sort of discard. But when we stick with it and we stay with it, and you can, you know, receive also support in the beginning parts of one's journey, we begin to recognize the power of that world. And so through that recognition, you know, our life changes, because it's this inner teacher available to us for the rest of time, you know. And there's something also very beautiful about that. I think that oftentimes we can feel very alone on this human journey, and there are inevitable moments of like difficulty and confusion, and where, you know, we might grab externally, and sometimes it'll work, and sometimes there is wisdom or solace that can come from the other. But it's very important to have tools that are available to us always, you know. And I love also the fact that you can be like in the most difficult environments. If I think of, for me, like being in some kind of like fluorescent light jail cell somewhere in like a city where I can't have no connection to nature, I still have the dream realm, you know. That's a tool in a way, or a map even for the path of life. Yeah.
Yes, it is. And it's, we can be so quick to seek the external for help with an issue. Just get this course, just listen to this teacher, just do this. But without realizing that we are getting tailor-made advice for ourselves every single night from a way higher place that knows our being and our heart and our lives so much more intimately than anything outside of us. And it's like coming back to that reverence of acknowledging how special that is. Yeah. And so I'd really like to go deeper with you into the dream decoding aspect, because I feel like this is a part where, for people who have maybe started opening up their dream world, and, you know, maybe they're lucid dreaming or having prophetic dreams, or they're having those bigger dreams that they know mean something. How do we kind of advance ourselves in the realm of dream decoding, where we're connecting to the true essence and the true message of that dream?
Yeah, absolutely. So to begin with, I want to just share for anyone who's listening who doesn't have like very pleasant dreams, that doesn't mean that they're very powerful dreams. And I share this because that has been and will probably for a lot of us continue to be one of the ways of reaping wisdom from that intelligence. So people think like the ones who are having lucid dreams where they're like swimming with whales or they're like flying and, you know, beautiful prophetic dreams, like with, I remember I had one dream of like weaving starlight, and it's like, that is what a dream walker experiences. And it's like, yes, that does exist, but actually really powerful dreams are often shadow work tools and maps and messages. And so that element of it, I want to clarify for the process of dream decoding, because there's in society sometimes like this, I mean, it's normal to like want the good and the juicy and the nectar and to call that like what is worthwhile. But to begin, I want us to know that like the dreams that make us feel confused and icky and even the ones that are reaped with fears are deeply sacred, you know, and even sometimes even more fruitful than the ones where we are lucid dreaming and flying, you know, with an eagle. Yeah. And so for the process of dream decoding, there's a series of things that I can share. And obviously, like, it's a whole, you know, it's a whole like study of work. So I will give just like nuggets of the most important things that come to me. One being that the language of dreams is symbol, and symbols are poetic representations of an energy. So they're not speaking directly, they're speaking subtly. And the ability for us to also use like logic and intelligence to decode something that is a mystic art is a very beautiful balance of yin and yang forces, you know? So I often in like the Dream Course talk about this is both a mystical art form, but it is also a logical and almost like mathematical process that you can merge these energies in order to make sense. It's a natural human drive to make meaning from. So in one of the forms of dream decoding, we do this where you go through the dream and you map out the symbols. And so symbols can be anything as simple as a specific person that shows up in the dream is a symbol. And then it can be something also weird and abstract, like a creature or an alien or a body, an element, a body of water. Like there's symbols they're multifaceted, right? So it's not just a thing. Sometimes think a symbol is just like a key. So you go and you map out the symbols, including people, including the setting. And then we will from there look at what does outside of the story of the dream, what does the symbol represent for me? What do I associate with this person? And an easy way to do that with people in particular is to list out the qualities that we would associate with this person outside of what they've done in the dream, because the dream's like using that association in order to communicate something. And I want to just say though, especially with dreams where people show up, sometimes we think that it's actually about that person or that we're having a prophetic dream about that person. And that can happen, but it's like a very marginal percentage of the time. The majority of the time, the dream realm is speaking to us because we are the person we have real impact over in a way. And so the way to actually walk differently in the world is not to be like all caught up in another person's life. It's a form of changing us from the inside or communicating to us from the inside for ways we can be more aware of the dynamics that are playing our lives, because the subconscious runs our actions, our thoughts, our actions, and our habits and our life, therefore. So those people then become like representations of a certain facet about us. So oftentimes we might have dreams about someone who we're like, why am I thinking of them? Or what do they mean? There could be some part of us that is like dormant that is then coming through in the dream world. And the dream world is almost like, it's like the bridge, right? So first it comes through the dreams and then it comes out into our life. So if any energies, for example, are suppressed, we will get dreams with people that represent the opposite of that suppression. And the way that we interact with that is about like, what are we suppressing of that energy? So let's say a very like loud, obnoxious woman, and we're like in this fight with them, and there's an internal fight going on in that person about an element of them that is actually much more vocal, that is like wanting to take space, but is not being fully allowed, and therefore comes out in a shadow aspect of it. And this was a game changer for me in dream work, is I learned the shadow doesn't mean that it's a bad thing. The shadow is something that we suppress, and therefore because we suppress it, it comes out in mostly toxic ways. But when we start to pay attention to it and to listen to it, the shadow actually becomes a superpower, you know? So that reframe has really helped me for looking and decoding my dreams, and to be willing to look at the parts of my dreams that I want to separate from myself instead of to bring them into integration.
And why does it become a superpower?
Yeah. Why does it become a superpower? Well, essentially, I think that being human, in a way, it's such a complex and interesting art and journey that we're on. And especially in the times that we're living, in the society that we're living, in the imprints that we're given from a young age, the majority of us, I won't say all, have parts of ourselves that are exiled. And from childhood, you know, or from the most, let's say, like, impactful moments of our youth, we spend a lot of the rest of our life trying to reclaim these parts of ourselves. And the beauty of reclaiming our shadow is that when you reclaim the energy and give it a healthy space, then it allows us to be a more full version of ourselves. But for whatever reason, oftentimes we have felt unsafe to be that full version. I think that's the path also of wisdom. It's not just as simple as, let's say, this like loud and obnoxious character. So it's not as simple as then just like walking into whatever room and like saying whatever you want to say. There is an intelligence and a grace and a maturity in like having a boldness, having character, having integrity. I would say even a loyalty to our truth, but with the grace of knowing when and how is it the right place to say it. But it's not about holding it back because it's not safe here. It's an intelligence that's about what is the way to walk from love in this room in equal balance for myself and for everyone present, but that the loyalty in a way is to honesty and fullness, you know, and wholeness. So that's how I felt. I can share one of the shadow aspects recently that I'm reclaiming. And, you know, there's a lot about the dark feminine spoken in the world right now, and I'm really grateful for it. And it's very complex. It's very complex. But for me, the dark feminine has literally saved my life. You know, it's literally like I bow at the feet of the dark goddess all day, every day. And I don't know if the dark goddess is always necessary in a society, let's say a utopian society. Like, do we need the energies of the dark goddess in that? I don't know. But the reality is we live in a time where the dark goddess is very, very important medicine. And so to me, the dark feminine has exposed itself in many ways, and it has exposed itself in reclaiming, as I mentioned earlier, a boldness and a daring to take up space and recognizing that for whatever reason, I it's not about self-worth. It's not even about self-confidence. It's just there's like a gender imprint from ages of oppression, from ages also of safety and not safety about that, that has choked that energy. And so I would receive a lot of reflections with like really arrogant men in my dreams. And I was like, why do they keep showing up? And I just wanted to push them away and push them away and push them away.
Ignore that dream.
Yeah. And in particular, right, like that character. And then, so there's an interesting thing where there's like who we are in the dream. And then there's the other energies that are playing out either in people or in elements like a tsunami or whatever. And so normally when you're in your like ego self, which is, I don't mean that in a bad way, just the self, we think that that self is right because that's our habitual way of thinking. So I was always kind of like dismissing these like arrogant men from the dream as in a way an enemy. And through support from dream guides and mentors in my life, I began to turn my attention to the arrogant man that kept showing up. And there's a dream decoding practice that Dr. Catherine Lawson, who's one of the most important and critical mentors that I've had, shares, called dream embodiment. And so what that practice entails essentially is that instead of doing what I said earlier, where we're using logic, we're actually just going straight into somatic wisdom. So this arrogant man showed up and she's like, okay, we dropped into a meta state, bring your consciousness over into that man and tell me, what do you feel in your body? What is his energy like? And I started to like puff out my chest. And it was like this, like it felt good, but I was also resisting it and I didn't want it. And I was like, oh, you know, arrogance. And as I puffed out my chest in the practice, you have to hold that for like a certain amount of time. I think it was like a minute or 2 minutes. And there's a reason you have to hold it, because again, the habitual consciousness wants to just evict it. But you hold it, and you allow the actual somatic feeling of that symbol to teach you something. And then after a certain amount of time, you know, she asked, okay, do you know anything now that you didn't know before? And I just started laughing because I was like, he is giving himself the permission to do and be and take up all the space in the world that I am not doing. And she was like, that's why he's now your best friend.
Oh my God.
And I was like, no, but yes.
Oh my God. Yeah, exactly.
And I just, because we get these like life lessons, and it's not just like in one direction. It comes in many, you know, many flavors in our life. And I remember speaking to a poet who I really admire, and she told me like, that one of the reasons like holy rage of women is such a big practice, and also is connected to sacred art. It's about this like ferocity that you need, the like daring and boldness that you need to create and then to share your work in the world. It's a requirement. It's like a base requirement. She said anytime that she has shared her poetry, whether live or whether recorded, it doesn't matter. Like there's a level of ferocity behind it, just in the act of putting it out there. And so that has been part of this, like, imagine the dark feminine medicine showing up through this very hidden, subtle symbolism that you would not imagine. And the beauty of maturity is like when then we begin to integrate that energy, because what's the fear? It's like, I don't want to be a narcissist. I don't want to be an arrogant fool and replicate what we've all seen in the world by a lot of men in power and the greater toxic masculine, you know. But the beauty of that is that when we begin to integrate it, it's still held by all of the wisdom and humility that has brought us up into that point, you know? So then we step into a place of power that's held with a loving and a, you know, self-awareness that doesn't let it go and detour into the shady aspects, you know?
I love that here in this dream, this symbol of this archetypal egotistical machismo masculine is actually the dark feminine is actually hiding behind that, and that's a deeper lesson there and how it disguises itself in these very unassuming ways. And I'm sure then when you bring that into your real life too, you come across someone who maybe fits that archetype or that role in your life, and where you would have like put up wall or division or casted a judgment on them, just even through decoding that own dream of yours, you can be more in like unity and oneness with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've always felt this, I don't know who said this or where I heard it, but that anyone who's truly in their power is not concerned about whether or not the others are. Or anyone who's truly in integrity is not really concerned about whether the others are or are not. Because there is something about it that when we get so caught up in them and over there, it's actually because we want to be able to influence from a deeper place for the better in the world, you know? So it's actually just turning back to us. And again, why I said before, like the dream world is speaking to us, because that is where our seat of power is. It's not about letting our consciousness go floating about judging this person and that. And it's like, it can be research in a way, but it doesn't come with that sort of like, ugh, it doesn't come with this charge and this nastiness towards the other. It just comes with an awareness that allows to inform our journey rather than to suck our energy over towards that.
And so let's flip that around, where we have one dream where there's someone yelling obnoxiously. And what would the reverse of that be, where we have dreams where we're yelling and nothing's coming out?
Hmm.
I don't know if you've ever had a dream like that, where you're trying to talk, you're trying to yell or communicate or say something, and just it's like nothing's coming out.
Yeah. Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah, I recently had a dream like that. And so I haven't really gone into the decoding element of it. I don't know. My initial thought is that it's about not expressing, or that you're trying to get something out and it's not coming out. It's not being expressed. It's not that you're holding it in, though, because the effort is there to try to express.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
then it just, it's like not leaving the body.
Yeah. Is there any other details that you remember from that dream, or anything leading up to it or after that occurred?
I was in Oaxaca. I was in like a really bustling place, kind of market in Oaxaca. I was going to find veggie pozole. And I remember there was a psychic there, and we were about to load a bus. And there was a psychic there, and she was trying to read me. And something about me didn't trust her. Like, I didn't want her reading me. But she was trying to. And she was going, there's someone there. There's someone else here. There's someone else, like another spirit here. And I was going, like, I know it's my aunt. She always shows up. It's going, like, I know someone else is here, but I don't. Something about her vibe was off. I didn't want her reading me. And, yeah, and then this like situation happened where I was trying to express myself. I was really mad about something, actually. Like, I was trying to communicate to an old friend, and it's like it just didn't come out.
Okay. Anything else that sticks out?
It was just like a vibrant, the scene was very vibrant. It was very, I really remembered the environment in that one, you know, being in Mexico, the colors and the markets and the, in that kind of market environment where there's a lot going on around me, the cobblestone streets and the sun. And like, I remember being warm and yeah.
So, okay, let's look at some of the symbols starting. Like, what does Oaxaca mean to you? What do you associate Oaxaca with?
Community, love, warmth, culture, expression.
Beautiful. Yeah, and it makes sense, even the colors and all of that. It's like the vibrancy of like a full expression. Yeah. Okay, so then this psychic came and you didn't fully trust her, and she was trying to read you. And then she said, there's another spirit here. And you're like, yeah, I know, my aunt, da, da, da. But you didn't want to let her fully in. And then later in the dream or in some other way, you were angry at this old friend and trying to express something, and it was choked. Yeah. Okay. So let's go to the symbol of the old friend. What is this friend? And maybe if there's a specific situation, but just what does that represent to you? You can either list like qualities about that friend, or you can talk about like the, what is that situation that made you angry represent? Either one is fine.
I would say it represents, the first thing that came up was betrayal and like judgment. I also think it represents a closed offness, a closed perspective. Seeing each other through a very singular perspective.
Okay. And your aunt?
I mean,
very key. It's a big one.
She was my everything. Wild, unapologetic, untamed, beautiful, expressive, passionate.
Okay. So with this old friend, you said there's a betrayal, there's judgment, and a closed off perspective, like a narrow way of seeing and thinking. And would you recognize any of that in yourself? Because it's interesting that the betrayal happened, or that like symbol happened right after not trusting the psychic. And oftentimes, and I know this from my own, like millions of times that I've done this, a guide or a magical force comes to help us. And because of our past traumas, we can't actually receive their help. And so there is an element here that like throws off our barometer of being able to discern who is a safe and unsafe person. And that psychic was picking up on a very beautiful and healthy energy that is with you and is you, which is like an extension of your aunt, let's say, and what she is or was, the wild, unapologetic, you know, free spirit and human. Also very represented by the like vibrant colors and Oaxaca. It's like a continued, in a way, reflection of that. And so there's something here in that wounding of the like betrayal and that closed off, you know, in a way also it's like there was a betrayal about a closed off perspective that then might have created an armor around you that prevents actually help from being able to enter. And that, like, that psychic, in a way, it's like our angels or guides or guardians that can only really do things when we are able to invite them in. So there's something here in this, some healing going on there. And the last part about like when you are trying to express unapologetically the anger and it's not coming out, I would say, and I'm so aware of this, that this is not how I would have interpreted this dream years ago. It's how I interpret it now after many, many, many years of research, let's say. It's not coming out, not actually because you have a block towards expressing anger, but because it's not meant to come out or be directed towards this old friend. That it's actually, the energy is something, again, as we were speaking earlier, it's like we're trying to put the attention over there, and that's not actually where it needs to go. That's not what's helpful for the forward movement. And that part of like the psychic trying to help and not being able to receive or help in a way, but to enter our field and bring magic to our field and not being able to is part of that, like turning the attention back in and alchemizing in some other way. So that's what I feel from this. And yeah, it's not actually like a choked something about you, because it's there. You're trying to get it out, but it's like sometimes the dream world will just block the habitual consciousness's way of doing things or wanting to do things. And because we are our habitual consciousness on the daily, we always think we're right, you know? And this is including for any of like for myself and for anyone who's worked with dreams for a long time. It's still, when we're in our dream world, we're still functioning from habitual consciousness. And so to be able to just pay attention to that element of it and say, okay, what I think is meant to happen here is not actually always what's meant to happen. Let me listen to the signs and the directions of what is actually going on in the dream to be able to teach me.
Yeah. Wow. When we're doing this dream decoding, this process that you kind of just took me through, is this a similar process that you would bring yourself through with when you're working with dream decoding, of pulling in what does the environment mean to me? What do these people represent to me? What does this food or this flower, this symbol or whatever it is? And kind of just seeing if you can access the deeper wisdom that's trying to come through there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And dream decoding oneself, like psyche, is a very challenging process the majority of the time. Alan Watts has this quote about like the reason that we need support, whether through teachers or whether through psychedelics in the case that he was speaking, or through a circle of friends, is because sometimes it can be like a knife trying to cut itself. And that's the process of decoding our own dreams. And so oftentimes I'll do exactly that and have this like system in a way of how to go about doing this and pay attention in particular to where is my habitual consciousness in this dream and what is the dream trying to show me about that. And oftentimes there will be some dynamic tension between our habitual consciousness and where our consciousness wants to go. And that, just that awareness is like a game changer in the way that we can decode our dreams. And I also, like, I bridge this way of working with dream embodiment, and I will often choose like one symbol in the dream at least. And the woman I mentioned earlier, Catherine Lawson, will kill me for this because she says that you should not and cannot try to do dream embodiment on yourself, but I still do. Because it helps, you know, it just does, even if it's not going to be the same as if you do it with someone who can help you like drop even deeper than you would go yourself. But it's still helpful because sometimes our body can teach us things that our mind cannot. So I will feel into a specific symbol, like the most powerful ones, and then close my eyes and find in my body what does, you know, whether it's a person or whether it's an energy or an element in the dream. Find what does that feel like? What is its texture? What is its first? Where is its location? And what is its texture? Is the energy wanting to go anywhere? And I'll let that sit in my body for a while. And then from there, see, do any revelations come?
So taking this dream, that the Oaxaca dream, and going through the dream decoding, and then it's almost like, once you've reached that deeper wisdom of, oh, this is what my subconscious was trying to bring forth. Oh, this is like where the healing and the integration lives. And this is what it was trying to get my awareness to within myself. Then going from that dream decoding into dream embodiment, like what you were saying, or dream alchemy, where we are now aware of what needs to be integrated. And now we need to move into that alchemical process. We need to move into integration, and we need to start to bring our conscious awareness into what our dream is telling us needs to change. And so What would that process look like for you?
So in like the concrete example of your dream, there would actually, so that there's like stages to dream embodiment work. And the most beautiful part of it is not actually just holding one of the symbols in our body, but holding several symbols at once, because that's what the dream is. It's like pieces that are trying to come into harmony and weave together. And so by holding, like, I would say that maximum anyone, you know, should try to do that's listening to this right now is like two. But in your dream, like the two most powerful would most likely be, where in your body does that betrayal sit? What does it feel like? Own it, allow it, give it space. And then to hold either, I would say, the energy of your aunt and find where separately, like, what is that energy? What does it vibrate like? What is it? Yeah, what is its texture? And to hold them at the same time, and then allow something new to be born from that. And so that's the alchemical process, is like by interweaving several energy. And you could choose between either your aunt or the psychic, you know, and I would say your aunt because it has such a very powerful charge and almost another guardian spirit. Like the psyche is like a vehicle towards that energy, really. And the importance also of the fact, like, any of our traumas that, like, someone like my father thinks that trauma has to be like, you know, you got totally destroyed and left homeless and, you know, were like abandoned as a child. But that's not the case. You know, trauma is any like unresolved pain in our heart that still affects us and that is weighing on us. Like, that can be something that seems, you know, minute, but really requires us to hold it with the utmost tenderness and not compare it to what we think like a worthy trauma is. And so like something like this, like conflict with a friend or someone who was once a friend, that's a big deal. It's a big deal. And a lot of things, and this is a lot of neo-tantra work and feminine wisdom teachings that are reclaiming emotions as part of spirituality, not something to completely evade, but actually to honor and give space and to be able to get lost in them, to not just like wallow in our mud, but to, with a reverence, knowing that we are able to always like zoom out, but not to escape it in a way, you know, to be able to allow it and give it space and honor it. And that essentially allows us to touch like the bottom of the well, and then naturally the energy takes another form, you know? So that's what I also recognize, like in myself, oftentimes I want to like skip ahead. I want to like, just like fast forward. And it's understandable because so much of the capitalist colonial patriarchy that we live in is like about your worth is and how much you produce and how perfect you are in doing it and da, 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 instead of just like you have worth as a human being, emphasis on the being. So what does it mean to like be able to really sink deep into the whatever process any of us are in and let it take the time that it needs, you know, and that our only job is to not ignore it, excommunicate it, or rush it, you know?
And going back to being in communion with our dreams and courting our dreams, it's like to court the process, you know, to bring the sensuality to and the slowness and the reverence and the appreciation to every stage of the beingness, not just where we want to be. And I know what you mean about those dreams that we just want to skip over because it's like, oh, that's uncomfortable, or like, oh, that came up again, or oh, that's still like churning in my subconscious somewhere. It's like we all have these residues of the, you know, the conversation that was left unsaid, or the hurt that's still there, whatever it is. And like how much in this dream decoding we can excavate. There's so much there if we can just not just recall it and then record it and then like decode it.
I'll add one thing, that there's also this beautiful way of ritualizing what comes up in our dreams. I really deeply believe in the practice of psychomagic, where you don't actually have to do something, let's say, like in real life with that old friend, but you can do a ritual practice that is either like a written letter that is burned into the spirit realms to communicate, or to turn that to speak from the wisdom that this dream now gave, to speak with the clarity of like how you are now digesting this differently, or turning the attention elsewhere, or releasing whatever part of you was like going over there, and allowing what is also the empowerment, in a way, the challenging empowerment of these conflicting situations, is like through a separation, bringing and digesting what it is that can change in us, so that even that conflict becomes a gift in our life, you know? And so to ritualize our dreams, like, I love this practice so much because it's another way of courting the dream world. It's like saying, I'm not just paying attention, but I am making a physical act in this realm that is honoring that invisible realm and the teachings of that. And I had a dream that at the end of the dream, there was a woman and she was a midwife. She was asking like a group of us that were there if we would accept our enrollment into the school of midwifery. And I was like, kind of like, because my habitual consciousness was like, I am about like poetry and feminine mysticism. And I gave natural birth, so it's important to me, but like, I'm not meant to be a midwife. So like, what are you talking about? You know, it was coming from that place. And I was like, why would I enroll in a school of midwifery? And then when I woke up from that dream and I decoded and la, 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 and I realized that it's midwifery of the soul and of the super self. And then I was like, oh my God, I didn't accept the fucking enrollment in the school. So in my altar, I took a piece of paper and I wrote, I cordially accept my enrollment into da, 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 the school of midwifery of the soul. I don't remember what I said. You know, sincerely, Ebin Zanini. And then I folded it into a paper airplane and I put it on my altar. Yeah, and it was so beautiful, like also the way that then the deep dream realm responds to these acts. And because it's again, ritual is a physical act that's representing an invisible energetic shift, you know?
Yes. So let's talk about when we receive those magical dreams, when the dreams bring us into the mysteries, when they reveal a piece of the feminine mysteries to us. For myself and a lot of women, our dreams are where we receive so many of the symbols and the knowings and the things that we wouldn't be able to know any other way. And how can we work with those dreams and ritualize them and give them also just as much value as the tough dreams too?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I am reclaiming a balance of the masculine in my seat of feminine power, because what I have received as the medicine of the true masculine is the beauty of system and structure and logic and how it can allow feminine power to just like, because inevitably in life and in all creation, I mean, human as well as nature, the two energies are like in a constant dance and different percentage of mixing, let's say, you know? So for me, with that, I would bring masculine structure to help me see how I can walk with this wisdom now in my life. And sometimes like writing is another one of these practices, right? That's like a beautiful balance, or poetry, but writing in general can be this beautiful balance of flow and of like, of poetic, but also like it requires a lot of logical intelligence to be able to write and to write well, even from the basics of like grammar, you know? We spend a lot of really like intensely systemic ways of thinking to be able to reach the level of expression that we do now with feminine beauty and magic weaving through our words. So for something like this, like the beauty that we can experience, I think that embodying, like feeling in our body where it is, and then walking with that on a daily basis, like holding that awareness in our consciousness. So I can give an example, let's see, of one that I remember. Okay, so I've shared this dream somewhere, and I think in a written paper, that yarrow, a plant, a really beautiful plant spirit, gave to me, which essentially I was like drawing or something. There was like a canvas in front of me, and then a voice, a feminine voice that was like soft like silk, said, "Draw what you hear in the wind." And it choose like one art form that's like my worst art form, it's drawing. And I was like, "Draw me?" Okay. And so I picked up, you know, the pen or the brush, and then I was like listening, and I heard high notes. And so I drew like a high note, and then I heard this like rising note. And so I drew like the way that the wind was rising. And then I think I drew some like splashes, like something that was like, and then before I knew it, after I had done these like very simple brush strokes, all of a sudden, like from behind the lines came to life into this masterful piece of visual art, where the line that I had drawn was like this incredible sunrise. The rising note was, there was like waves that were the splashes, and one of the splashes turned into a swan that became the rising note. And I was like in awe at this piece. And then the voice came back again and said, "Well done, little darling, well done." And what I recognized from this was it was the plant spirit of yarrow. And a lot of, like for me, plant spirits are demigods in a way, or goddesses in this case. And so that magic of when you create, you don't have to do anything perfectly. God comes and fills in the rest, you know? And that changed my life. So without even doing anything with that, let's say. But so this was one of the most beautiful dreams in my life. And if I feel like in my body where that lives, and then because we can have like spiritual amnesia and get these messages and then kind of forgetting, and I can get very caught in the creative process of like, first I'm like, oh, this is, I have a, you know, a drop of inspiration. I'm like, oh, this is shit. And I'm like, okay, maybe there, no, that didn't work. And then, you know, I can get in all of that. But if I remember that dream and if I hold it in my body, it will help me know to also enjoy this process and to trust again that God will fill in the pieces, you know? And that is, I think, part of how we can, you know, like it's a structure that helps me keep that dream, that feminine wisdom alive in my life. And so what I mentioned just before about like how logic and structure and systems can help us. So like even to list or to write clearly, like how can I continue, in what ways, like can I continue to work with or embody or hold the wisdom that this magical dream gave me? And we can, only any of us can specifically know that, you know, that would be mine, is that in that moment when I'm in the creative process and I'm losing it and I'm like getting all caught up and not enjoying it, and to take a moment, feel in my body, come back into the embodiment of that dream in particular, and to allow myself to be imbued with what it, to that, that memory in a way, and that trust towards the magic of life, the magic of divinity coming and co-creating. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like remembering to stay in relationship with the dream, recording yes. the dream, and then we receive the dream, and then we can't just like forget about the dream and go on with our lives. We have to stay in relationship with it. And like what you were saying about the embodiment practices of like, well, we can remember the energy. I had this dream recently and it was so alive. It was so like creatively inspired, and we're like in a studio overlooking the water, and there was just that energy of like inspired creation of the soul work coming to life. And I remember one of the main symbols in this dream was, you know, just that feeling of like where it's just like it's flowing, but then like you're creating a community. And we were like in this studio overlooking the water, once again, kind of in a little town, I don't know where, but the main symbol that stood out to me in this dream was a light pink linen covered book. And it was like embossed. It had like some gold embossed words on it or something. This book stood out to me so much. So it's like remembering to breathe in the energy of that studio.
Yes, and particularly that book, because in a way like that is a physical manifestation of that energy of the entire dream, so they can kind of like see it in a thing. And that helps so much, you know? So you can literally just like, and like any moment, hold that book or look internally at that book to remember what it's like. And that's why right now, like visualization practices are like exploding in our world, because it's true. In order for it to come into our life, we have to begin to know that essence of it in our mind beforehand. Our mind and our thoughts and our they are what influence our body and our energy and how it emits into the world.
And going back to what you were saying about how our patriarchal society has rushed everything up, you know, and it's created this very anxious, very rushed, very hurried, very internally chaotic kind of environment. And it's almost like that was created so that we couldn't access this, because in order to really sit with that book and feel the energies of that book, to write the poems that are in that book and let the brush strokes, that also requires surrender. You know, you have to show up, but then you have to let go. You know, the poem doesn't come out if you're trying to think your way through it, you know? And so there's that unwinding and unraveling, because we have to slow down in order to receive this like higher co-creation.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And that's actually the number one reason why it's very hard for people to remember their dreams. It's like the amount of movement and chaos in our lives and intake that's happening without enough space, without enough of like quiet, that requires us to like work even harder to remember our dreams. And what most people will experience, like if you go on retreat somewhere where there's no Wi-Fi, where you're not doing a lot during the day, all of a sudden people start to remember dreams, you know? And that, like what you're bringing up right now, like the importance of that restfulness in our existence that's in balance with action, is so valuable. You know, it's like, and valuable is not even the word, yeah. That's an understatement. Like it's a birthright. And I look at animals oftentimes, like if you watch any of them, deer, tigers and lions, like what do they spend the majority of their time doing? Resting. They're just like licking themselves and each other and just staying under the shade. And then all of a sudden they have to hunt, you know, and one of four hunts are successful. But they're still chilling. And as opposed to like human created culture, which is in the process of being reshaped, we are pressured to be on, do, produce. And where is this space to allow, like, there's a Buddhist saying, a cup that's always moving can never be filled, you know? And that's the power of meditation, but it's also the power of what we're talking about now, that spaciousness of whatever it is that creates, like, a quiet in our being, in our mind, you know? And, like, for me, it's very helpful when I'm alone in the house, right? But I could still be alone in the house and be, like, bustling and doing or trying to write the poem. And if I just, like, do something, like this morning I chose to have this first, my son has just gone to school for the first time and I'm like, oh my God, my life's about to end. And so it's the first day and I was like, I should be doing this and I could do this. And then I have this, you know, this piece that I'm working on. And then I've been really, really reclaiming and listening. There's a woman, Trisha Hersey, who wrote Rest as Resistance. It's such a beautiful book. And I was like, the first thing I'm going to do is something that is restful. And so I took a cup of cacao, I purposefully left my phone, which was very hard, and I went to sit and watch the ocean. And I had a book which I read at some point, but it was a book that wasn't dropping me in here. It's like a very poetically written, like, yeah, it was written by this Brazilian witch from like the 1970s, and the way that she thinks, even though I'm reading words, it's like dropping me into my body and into the magic of life. But I was in this restful state as the priority for the first way I'm going to spend my free time. And just the anecdote that when we start to do that, our cup gets filled, you know.
Well, and I think a key piece of what you said was I left my phone even though I didn't want to, because we can fool ourselves into resting, thinking that we're resting, but really we're just checking out, we're distracting, we're numbing ourselves, we're not looking at what's coming up. And so it's important to not just reclaim rest, but use that restful time to like feed ourselves, to do things that feed ourselves and to have practices that we can go to that are restful, but they're also, when we're connecting to these different frequencies, when we're kind of reattuning our energetic field, when we're doing these more working with the subtle realms, well, our body isn't moving, but they're recalibrating ourselves or retuning ourselves. They're still feeding us versus just, oh, I'm resting, I'm gonna go and check out on social media for the next hour. That's not real rest. And then that brings up the comparison or the this or the that. It's not like nourishing our soul.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. This has nothing to do with dreams, but it's something really important, which is about this comparison element, and especially present because of social media in so many of us. There's this place of awareness where if we can use comparison as like fuel for inspiration, it changes everything, you know? And what I recognize for myself now, like when I'm scrolling, if there's anything that is generating like an unhealthy energy in me, I immediately unfollow or get rid of it. Or like, why would I follow anyone who is like constantly charging something in me that is not actually, has no forward movement? And if there's somewhere that I'm comparing and I can transmute that into inspiration, then I'll keep it. And if I can't, it's out of here for now, because it's only going to take me like, and I think that this is one of the key also healings for the feminine, is to take radical responsibility about that, and the way that our judgments towards other women are, again, like a waste of energy, and they're ineffective, not useful to anything or to anyone, and they can inform our lives in a very beautiful and healthy way. And oftentimes, just like in our dreams, are reflective of some suppressed energy. And I feel now like, at least at this moment, there's very few external energies that are making me angry or annoyed or like if I have any disdain towards them. And I'm so grateful for having turned to the dream realms and to the like more sticky dreams, even though I love the magic ones, but the more icky, sticky ones, because they have granted me this peace of being and this awareness to like keep turning it inward and to also have the dark feminine energy and awareness of like some things are valid, but far away from me. You know, like to have this balance of also taking care of our energy and be strong enough, loving enough to be able to say, in my field, none of that, you know, the sacred no. So, yeah, I am eternally grateful. The dark feminine and dream work have been the two things that have been the most well. And there's others.
What did you want to say?
Iboga has been like a game changer for me because it's another demigod plant spirit that has been deep shadow work. And it works in the subconscious in a very similar way that dreams do. Like you're in a waking dream state for like several days, a lot of time. And I went through an initiation when I was in Africa a few months ago. For a long time, I was like avoiding. And I'm African, and I'm like, I've done other plant medicines, but I was like, yeah, Iboga, nah, no, thank you. And I think some part of me maybe knew it was like, you know, Iboga sounds. It sounds like something I'm not. That's not going to be very pleasant. And for whatever reason, I felt the call, and I went, and I was humbled to the ground. You know, like complete ego death in the sense of just everything I thought about myself that was like, you are something, was all nonsense. It was all nonsense. I was like trying to be, but it wasn't a true self-confidence born from like a love of self and the just realness, you know, the realness of all the ways I actually felt inferior or insignificant or shitty and whatever, for whatever things, you know? And so it humbled me to the ground and birthed me from that place, you know? And so that's why what I was saying, dream work, the dark feminine and Iboga, which is one of the masculine demigods available now. And I am someone who has turned to the feminine and like bows to the feminine for so long. And because of this plant medicine, I learned the magic and the importance of like structure, the beauty of that and the help, and to turn to that energy in equal reverence as the feminine.
Yes. Well, because our idea of the masculine hasn't been the true masculine. It hasn't been the true heart-centered, conscious, loving, noble masculine. And, you know, it's been the patriarchal inversion of it. And so our ideas of what masculinity, our own inner masculine means, has been not based off of truth. How could we bow to something? How could we revere something that isn't true? That isn't love.
Yeah. Right. And it's interesting because it's like so many of us haven't had examples, but how many of us have had examples of like truly embodied feminine beings either? You know, like we are maybe just starting to get to know each other on this plane again.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and there's something really beautiful about that acknowledgement.
Right? Well, even in relationship too, and how that, it's like maybe we haven't known anything this whole time, you know, and there's like a clean slate there. And maybe because we're more feminine leaning beings, it's the only difference is that leaning into the void, leaning into the dream world, into the dark feminine, into dance or poetry or like these ways that we access that, it just feels a little bit more comfortable. It just feels a little bit more nourishing. So we've leaned that way a little bit more. And now it's just like, how can we get just as comfortable with the structure, with the routine? How can we revere it just as much as the sacred dance in the dream world, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I recognize that in myself. Like part of the leaning came from, you know, an entire earlier life that was very little feminine available. There was a lot of femininity, but the feminine was not there, you know? And so then when you get a taste of it, you're like, oh my God, finally, finally, and we like are absolutely deserving. And again, this is part of what helps us with judgment. Like now when I see, let's say, even when I see someone who I feel is like embodying, let's say, what I would call like superficial femininity, just as like a stage in the path, you know, it's just a stage. Just like we don't look at someone who's just learning to whatever, like my son who's learning to go to pee in the toilet. I'm not like annoyed at him for not knowing that now. They're just parts of the process of our awareness as humans. Yeah. And some of us might be like, you know, in one place, in one field, and another place, in another field, and to never think that this person has nothing to show me of worth is also deeply like, there's just something about the about this way of seeing that is a relief in a way, you know? I spent a lot of my life in, yeah, and because I think when you have also a high standard for yourself, you have like the standard for other people. And so I spent just a lot of time leaking my energy in that and being like, nah, that's no. and I deeply appreciate being able to recognize that also, the way that the feminine, yeah, the rise of the feminine is valid no matter where in the process we are, you know? Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, and she's here for us no matter where in the process we are too. Like she's always serving us. She's always feeding us. What is the biggest lesson the dark feminine is giving you right now?
So if I'm honest, my next, like my upgrade has been balance. So I was all in the dark feminine with no balance. Let's say, like, what would we call the light feminine? Mm. The Madonna figure, like the loving, just nurturing in that form, like, you know, with your baby, the softness. And so there was like these, like, there was a split, and it kept coming up in my life that people would, some perceive me as this like ferocious, courageous being, and others would perceive me as this like kind of like weak or meek person. And then if I would get like someone cross me the wrong way, I'd be like but there was this like weird duality going on, and so what I recognized was also duality of my psyche, where there was these like split beings. And then if I began to, and it's the same, it's like balance of dark and light, balance of masculine, feminine. For me, the path, and I want to give my respects also to like the Buddha and the path of, and the philosophy of Buddhism about this, balance is the only way, you know, it's the only way. Mm. And there is an incredible peace available to us when we come from that place. Yeah. And this is not from the dark feminine. This is more from the masculine, but it has helped my dark feminine because I had none of this before, is the importance of a sense of humor.
Oh my God.
It's so important.
It is vital.
Like to have a sense of humor, you have to be a little bit more loose, right?
You have to be playful.
You have to be playful.
And so, in order to be playful, you have to be trusting.
Yeah, exactly. So when I was like in my dark feminine study, let's say an initiation, I had very little sense of humor. And that was okay. Again, it's like a step in the process. But now that I have it again, oh my God, life is just like so much better. It's so much better and juicier, and I'm more effective at whatever I want to communicate and share in the world. And because, you know why? Because when we touch back in with the sense of humor, we're also back in touch with the cosmic joke. You know, we're in it. So we're doing that to other people in a way, just by our way of being. Like a lightness is so light in terms of like, you know, feathery.
Yeah, because the dark feminine takes us so deep in the dissension. It takes us so deep into the depths, into the underworlds, into the roots, and we're like untangling all these knots and threads and all of that. But it's like as we go low, we have to equally go high. And like that's where it's like if we're not matching how low we've gone into the dark feminine with the lightness and the brightness and the levity and like the jovialness of life, being light as a feather, you know, we're not going to have balance.
Yeah. And it's exhausting. It's heavy. It's literally heavy. And so there's this density to it. But if you think about it, that's like warrior energy is kind of like that. It's like don't mess with me. You know, it's very, it's good. It's so good. And the opposite, let's say the unhealthy version of that, like light featheriness, is very superficial. Yeah. If you don't have your roots down
right.
deep, so that's part of that equilibrium that happens, you know, and I'm not claiming I'm finished in any way. I'm just really grateful for the balance that I'm now beginning to experience and be taught, you know?
And how they both nourish each other.
Yeah. And they're no longer, exactly. They're not in a fight.
Yeah.
They're not in some kind of like, or some, you know, bipolar spiritual swing.
Right.
It's become a tapestry. Yeah.
So in your explorations with the masculine and finding your own rhythms with structure and routine and like having the container, have you found ways to lean into that, you know, with the same sort of joy or ease or effortlessness that you lean into your feminine, to be able to lean into that part of you with, I don't know,
levity. Yeah, it's a great, great, great question. I haven't even thought about it like that in any way. But I mean, what I feel about the levity for me with the masculine is like, just again, I'm humbled. I'm humbled because I think I had a superiority thing going on, thinking that the feminine was better. I did. I think I'm just now really fully vocalizing it. I've had, you know, artists and friends who I really admire who are like embodied, powerful women who have also communicated that to me. The first big lesson I had in this was with I had a son, right? So like, I really wanted a daughter to be able to like share many things like dance and about the goddesses and all of this. And then I had a son and I was like, but I'm so grateful I had like natural birth and didn't know the gender, because in my dreams towards the end of my pregnancy, I started to receive communications of having a little boy that made it way more like I saw the beauty of having a boy once I actually gave birth, you know, so it already helped me to digest this tension that was going on in me, but it still took some time, you know, like, so recently, I have just been humbled to really deeply respect and appreciate what the true masculine is. And that allows this ease, and it is the joyfulness. Because if I look at it, like, I was just so mad. But what I was mad about is like how messy existence has been. And now I'm starting to, it's not acceptance, it's kind of just like an embracing of the human condition. And a celebration of it even. And I've been, and then what happens, I notice, is like we have this like door opening in our consciousness, and then we start to get like certain music might come into our life, or we hear a talk that's about that thing and it starts to deepen. It's like the you know, life comes and gives us more clues. And so I listened to, and I've been meaning to do it for a while, but I stumbled across this talk by David Avocado Wolf about Rudolf Steiner and his work. And in it, in this podcast, he said something about how happy he was to be born in these times. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so mad. I've just been so annoyed at humanity for what we've done in all the ways, right? Like to the earth, to the feminine, to brown, black, and indigenous people. I've just been so annoyed at the process of evolution and existence. And that has made me very ineffective. What I heard from him in that statement and in his energetics was like, it's kind of like it was badass. It was badass to say, I'm celebrating the fact that I'm doing something of worth, first of all, because that's also key. It's like, he knows that he's having impact. And he's taking this on as kind of like as a challenge rather than as this like heavy, like horrible weight upon us all. And if there's a playfulness in that, right? It's a very like kind of thing. And that has been so, because I started to respect the masculine, I've gotten mirrors of and wisdom that I can receive from the masculine that is deepening my respect and my own ability to live with more joy in my heart and more embracing, you know, and balance.
I'm so glad you brought up David Avocado Wolf because he is just a perfect example of joy, like levity, right? Of joy, of a childlike wonder. He does everything with sort of this irreverence and this sort of chuckle to it. Like you can be doing your like big work in the world and kind of be like giggling at it. Behind the scenes, you know, like that, to not take everything so seriously, to kind of find the cosmic joke in all of it. And that just makes our life so much easier, because when we're just in that bitterness and that resentment, it's like they're winning. If I'm not happy, if my field isn't emanating the joy and gratitude of this right. short time that we have here, then my life force is going elsewhere.
Yes. There's this piece we never recorded, but I don't even remember the setting, but there was some like concert where we were doing this spoken word and music collaboration, and I was in a place that had been sort of struggle for me to be in. And in that moment, I was just feeling the magic of like when we bring, how to say this, like a sexiness to the fight, like a very, like the beat that was in the music and everything. It was like, and this was one of the lines in the spoken word that happened like improvised in the moment. It was like, we got to make the party so good that even the demons want to join us, you know? And that is what I feel about the movement, you know, the movement of everything, like falling back in love with the earth. When we're creating art, we're not like pointing fingers so much. We're creating an art that's so impactfully beautiful because of the reverence we feel that even the demons want to join our party, you know? Like that's the direction. And I think levity is necessary for that.
It's a key ingredient. And so bringing that into what you were talking about with the comparison online, how do you work with bringing in that like sexiness, that sensuality, that sort of energy to these rough edges, to these denser areas of I'm stuck in a comparison loop, or, you know, you feel your energy drop? How do you court the comparison and alchemize it into inspiration right. for your life?
Right. I'm just trying to like go into my field and feel like when's the last time I was comparing or competing. Yeah. So I'm gonna share something that may be slightly like a detour, but it's valuable. And then I think it'll tie back into this. So it's about the sexiness and bringing the sexiness to what we want to transmit, not necessarily to how we're intaking. But I love that you brought that, because I don't think I've actually thought about that, like bringing that sort of like playful sexiness into something that is a trigger or a challenge, and how to digest it. But first, I'm going to start from the outtake. So the most popular piece that I've done is actually a piece about like the oppression of women. It's a very short piece, but in it, I say, I am woman, rumbling ocean, soft petals of an orchid's crown. Why would you try to diminish the sun? I am where you come from. And so this piece, if I had just said it, I'm sure it would have done well, but maybe not that much. But I attached it to a video where I'm dancing, and I got a lot of heat from women, actually, because I was dancing in a very traditional, like, African way. You see me from behind. I'm not like, you know, in a tiny, tiny shorts or anything like that, but it's sexy. And I have not allowed myself until very recently to like be the juicy woman that I am. And it's not looking for anyone's attention. It's just like, I am a ripe mango, and ripe mangoes are incredible. And all of us who want to be in this ripeness should have access to it, you know, and to share in the joy of seeing it, you know, as a reflection of each of us. And that's how I receive the beauty of others now, is like, it's not their beauty. I get to like drink in their beauty, which is a reflection of me. And if I didn't have it in me, I wouldn't be able to see their beauty, you know? But anyway, so I'm dancing, and the reason that I think many men received that video and it went viral is because of this balance of a very meaningful kind of like, because it was happening during the Iran women's led movement of like, what the fuck? What do you guys know? Why? We are meant to be radiant like the sun, you know? Even though I know the sun's not normally associated with the fender, it doesn't matter. Like, we are radiant, beautiful temptresses of what, you know? But it's not a bad thing. Like, fall in love with the feminine without trying to eat her alive. Enjoy. It's like we are a gift. And, you know, as I mentioned, like, I'm learning how to masculine energy and physical, it's also a gift for us, you know?
Yeah.
But so creating it during this very tense dynamic and then bringing a polarity of what is a sexy full dance to a very powerful message allowed a lot of men who would never have liked that to like it and to receive it in some way, you know?
Yeah.
And it's one of the only posts also that's balanced between like male, because you can see on Instagram and statistics, like how many women and how many men are following you or liking you. And all of a sudden it was balanced, where most of the time, because of everything I was talking about and the way I was talking about it, was only women. And so I recognize just that there's a beauty in it. And I also really am glad for the tough skin that the dark feminine gave me, so that I can discern when there's a comment that or a reflection that can help me grow versus just projection and old paradigm pain that's coming out. And then I don't get caught in it unless there is a window of like shared mutual learning or growth or understanding, you know? Yeah. And in terms of like the sexiness of taking things in, I think that the biggest way of doing that is what David said, which is, if we can celebrate the times that we're in and kind of like take this as a beautiful challenge and not as a horrible, you know, like hell, if we can take it as this beautiful challenge, because inherently that means like I believe in myself, to take it as a challenge and I believe in myself to be able to be a part of this challenge and help to alchemize it. And so in the same way, like if a trigger is coming forward in a comparison or something, I think that self-love and self-worth is the beginning of all of everything. So as soon as that comes, drop it and come into like a practice. Again, I love the masculine, like, you know, three things that I'm proud of myself for, or three things that I admire about myself. Very tangible, map it out and like feed ourselves with that. Yeah. Yeah.
Mapping.
Yeah.
Love.
My husband's just come in the room because I'm blocking our kitchen. I think that they're probably starving.
Okay. Well, we'll let them get their food. Well, I think that was a beautiful, beautiful note to end it on. And yeah, you know, going back to the mapping it out and to give ourselves some container and structure for so much that flowed through today, you know, going through the wild dreaming and the dream recall and the dream decoding, the dream embodiment, the dream rituals. Those are some like really practical ways that we can start to work with and bring down the more mystical energy. So I love merging that, you know, mystical with practical, giving tangible things that we can do. Is there anything else that you want to leave it with?
I just want to celebrate all of us. I want to celebrate you. I want to celebrate myself. I want to celebrate all of the listeners, you know, like just well done. Thank you for existing. You know, like we're doing it. It's not that we don't have to wait for some over there moment to like really honor and celebrate who we are and how far we've come, and that we are shifting things, you know, and we're going to make it through these times and we're going to enjoy ourselves in the process.
And we're going to enjoy ourselves in the process. Amen. Yes. Yes. And thank you. You know, there was so many times my body just chilled, shivered when you talked in this conversation. So that always tells me I'm in like a field of resonance, a field of truth. And so thank you for these deep truths and wisdoms that you shared and these practices and we're doing it. We're doing it. And we have so much to be proud of ourselves for. We have so much to be grateful for. We have so much to be in awe of just through this living and this life. And any edge that we come up against, any fear that is revealed to us in our dreams, we get to bring our sexy dance to it. You know, we get to dance with it and we get to make it fun. We get to bring the levity to the depth.
I have one thing I want to share because you just reminded me.
Yeah.
I did this like random acting improv class like a long time ago in a mindfulness retreat. This guy just like offered some acting practices and he had us stand in a line and there was a bottle here and there was a person here. And then the rest of us were in these two lines facing each other with the bottle at the end and the person on the other end. And then the person on the other hand was blindfolded. And the challenge was you have to go and pick up the bottle, obviously, without seeing. And so he told the rest of us in the line, whether they pick up the bottle or not, I want you guys to just cheer and applause wildly. And so I remember the feeling of walking and you're like, you're trying to use your intuition and like, okay, maybe like four steps. First, you kind of like scope out and you're like, all right, four steps forward. And then nobody got the bottle, but none of us cared because it was felt so good. Like imagine like, you go and you don't have the bottle and everyone's like, yeah. And it just was like a total rewrite in my mind about failure. Like if we can hold each other and cheer each other through life, what is failure and what is success doesn't even really matter. You know, we're doing this thing the best that we can and we're going to keep getting better each and every moment.
Yes, and we're all cheering for each other. So even if you don't hear it, just tap into the field and feel each other. We're all rooting each other on, you know, we're all cheering loudly exactly. For each other through the ethers. A really good job. Thank you so much. I loved every moment of connecting with you, and I'm so excited for your wisdom to get out to everyone listening. And where can they get in touch with you?
The best way is my website that you can find through my Instagram or go directly there, templeofthewild.com. And I have some online courses that are like self-paced replays and then others that will come up that will be live versions. And for like little poetic offerings of art, Instagram, or also some bigger pieces that will be out in video, hopefully in the next year or so. Yeah.
Cool. Beautiful. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm so happy that you called this in and I enjoy it so much speaking with you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Ruby Ray. I am your host, Jacqueline Norton, and I will see you next time.